Welcome to Awake to Oneness Radio. I am Caroline Chang, your host. The mission of Awake to Oneness Radio is to inspire the world to awaken to the universal truth of oneness. Science is now teaching us that all life is energy, and that energy is interconnected and interdependent. And so in essence, that energy is one thing. Ancient wisdom and spirituality has been teaching the truth of oneness for eons, and now science is catching up. But it's not even new science. I'm talking about quantum physics, which is over 100 years old. So this is something we should know by now, that we are literally all connected. What you do to another person, you're literally doing to another aspect of yourself. There is no separation. And when mankind awakens to the universal truth of oneness, there will be peace on earth. Today's show topic is When Souls Awaken with Peter Elson. Peter, welcome to Awake to Oneness Radio.
Thank you, Caroline. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. Now, Peter, could you please share with our listeners, I love the title of your website, When Souls Awaken, because it's all about waking up and remembering who we truly are as divine souls. So please share with our listener your background, your journey, and what brought you to the work that you're doing now.
Well, I'm originally from Holland, the Netherlands, and my parents were very progressive people. My mom was a yogi in the early 70s. Initially, she was with TM, you know, the Transcendental Meditation.
Yes, actually, I had an aunt. That's very interesting. It was in the 70s. My aunt got into Transcendental Meditation, and I remember that so clearly. She would have people come over the house, and they would sit and do Transcendental Meditation. And I was like, what is this going on? You know, I was a teenager. I was a young teenager at the time. But yes.
So. That was my reaction too initially, like what, you know, but I really had an affinity for it, and I even got initiated into it when I was just 9 years old.
Okay.
I loved all that stuff. And finally, my mom kind of transitioned more into the Yoga Vedanta world, more Vedic, more a little bit devotional stuff. And so I kind of grew up in a house that was that way. And but I went to college to study industrial design. I finished. And then after a short stint in the army, I was drafted. Then I actually joined a spiritual center near Paris.
Okay.
Well, technically they called it an ashram, but it was the part of the Vedanta Society. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It kind of has branches all over the world.
A little bit. I'm not extremely familiar, but I have heard. I am a little bit familiar, yes.
Yeah, in the Western world, it's really known as the Vedanta Society. In India, it's called Ramakrishna Math and Ramakrishna Mission. It's a huge, vast organization. And I just joined there after college because I was kind of not interested in being an industrial designer, though I graduated with it and I worked for it for a while. But I thought, yeah, this is as boring as it can be. So I was interested in spiritual life. And there was a big saint that lived there.
Okay.
An Indian saint who headed that center, and people from all over the world would come there and visit him. And I just loved to be there with the people interested in living a spiritual kind of life. And initially it was just that. I just wanted to be there and hang out. And it turns out I ended up as becoming a monk in that tradition and being 21 years as a Vedic monk, kind of lived all over the world, 11 years in India.
Mm-hmm.
4 years in France and England a year, and then I was finally transferred to the United States here to be kind of a giving talks and stuff like that, and be part of a monastery in California.
Okay.
And so I was there for 6 years, my last 6 years in the order, and then finally I felt like, you know, this has been great. It was a great journey. I was happy with it. I was happy to be a monk. But at the same time, I thought, you know, there's other sides of life and of myself that I like to explore. And it was at that time when I started reading Dr. Michael Newton's books, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, this is like, you know, this is amazing. And I really would love to, you know, more. And so it all kind of coincided with my life. And I was ready to kind of leave and keep my spiritual search obviously intact, but not being so institutionalized, basically not organized.
Right.
And though we were very liberal in the way we did things, still it was one particular lifestyle which I thought I had explored enough. So
right.
I went back to college, and for the next 5 years or so, I studied clinical hypnosis, and then finally started to, it takes, you know, a certain amount of years to qualify for the Newton Institute. And then I finally was accepted there, and then it took still another while before they allow you to practice. And finally, I started specializing in past life and life between life regressions. And that's what I do now. And when you say When Souls Awaken, what I really did finally is, you know, write this book, When Souls Awaken.
Yes.
And that is the title of one of my websites.
Yes.
And in this book, I share basically not only my own journey, but also the journey of my clients who went through these past life regressions and life between life regressions.
Yes, very, very interesting. I actually have been very interested in Michael Newton's work and Lives Between Lives. Actually, the week before this airs, there will be another hypnotherapist who studied Michael's work. So, and I didn't even realize that you had also studied that and a certified hypnotherapist studying Michael Newton. So that's amazing, because I've been very interested in Lives Between Lives, because I do believe that we are divine souls and that we plan each incarnation, you know, before we come here. It's not a linear plan, like a straight line. We think, as humans, we think of everything in a straight line. I think the plan looks more like a spider web, you know, and it's, so if you make this turn and that turn, but I believe that it's all, everything we do in our life, we plan from our higher self, and it's for our highest good. So I'm so happy that you're talking about that, because that's something I'm very interested in. And please continue. So when did you come to the States?
Must be 10, 12 years ago. I don't remember. I think 2007 or so, which is almost 13 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And I basically specialize only in past life and life between life regression work. And then I'm an author. I write books about this topic.
Uh-huh.
And for me, it's what you're sharing, that we're all one and that our nature is divine.
Yes.
That is really what I like to share with my clients. Well, the nice thing about the work that I do is that I have them experience it themselves.
Yes. Yes,
so,
yes.
But all of them, they come either through reading Michael Newton's books, or nowadays I get a lot of people who have read my own book. And the beauty, what I'm trying to really share in my book particularly, is the notion that science and spirituality can be together. Yes. You opened up the idea, you opened up this show today with the notion of quantum physics. And
yes.
I actually had a client. What triggered me to write this book is a lot of people, when you read Michael Newton's work, you know, he was a groundbreaker and a pioneer, right? Just like Brian Weiss was for past life regression.
Yes.
Michael Newton was the pioneer of life between life regression. And so they have really broken the ice, and you know, was even risky for them, for their academic credibility in a predominantly left world of academia.
Yes, very true.
However, yes. Still a lot of people, whether academia are accepted or not, I think millions and millions of people don't really care what academia thinks. They themselves are pretty much, you know, convinced that past lives and life, and that it could be a reality. And whether you believe in past lives or not, the notion that we are a soul living in a human body is something that definitely is, you know, not a lot of people.
Right? Well, very widely accepted. Even organized religion speaks of that we are souls, that we are eternal, we go on. You know, organized religion, sometimes they have it where there's, you go on to heaven or hell, you know, one right. or the other, which I don't buy into that. Especially I don't buy into the notion of hell. It's just, you know, I think that's just a man-made up thing, but to control, but it's all good. Because everything, when I say it's all good, because it's all one, there is no separation. It's all God. It's just, we're all cells of God here to experience all that is. So I
do. Well, the thing is that triggered me is I had a client who was a big, well-known scientist, and he came to my office in Los Angeles, and I asked him, at that time I hadn't written my book, where I am addressing some of these issues, and I asked him, I said, well, did you read Michael Newton's books? And he said, yes, I did, but I didn't really care about it.
Okay.
I said, why not?
Okay.
He said, I'm a scientist and I'm a Buddhist, and I believe in the idea of oneness. And the idea that, you know, like Einstein tried to define the unified field theory, and Max Planck and, you know, Schrödinger and all the quantum physicists, they all try to share this notion of oneness. And he said, when I was reading Michael Newton's books, there was more an idea that there's a world out there where there's guides and angels and beings. And he said, to me, it doesn't make sense when you think of oneness. I mean, how do you correlate the idea of oneness with an afterlife? He said, I don't get it. And I thought it was very much a Christian Judaic projection of the world upon heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it's a good question that you're asking. I said, however, had you read Michael Newton's books all the way through,
right,
you would have realized that he never contradicted that. I must give it to you that at some point he tapped out, you know, because he kind of left it open, because he also wasn't, I think, fully sure, you know, what's beyond. But he never said that this is it, and this is life, and there is no oneness above that, because he definitely talks about different levels. And so, however, I think in the days that he wrote this book, and in the days that the groundbreaking work that he did was already such a huge thing that I think he wanted to also be cautious as to how far he would take it, and presented it in a way that was very still acceptable in a way in a predominantly Christian Judaic culture. And then maybe in those days, though, you said well that quantum physics is already 100 years old, but it's not really that much known or really understood by a lot of people, and definitely not integrated with spiritual thought as much as, particularly not in the 60s and 70s. It's something that really now in the yoga world is much better understood.
Yes.
And so I thought, well, I would like to address this issue. Mm-hmm. How can whatever Michael Newton said and described, because these are valid experiences that people had during regression sessions.
Yes.
How can you unify that with the notion that everything is one? What the Buddhists say and the quantum physicists say.
Okay. I don't want to cut you off. I do want you to hold that thought. I do want you to continue. But here's the problem with human thinking. We always think it's this or that. Mm. But in truth, it is always, always this and that. So Michael Newton's talking about, yes, we have a higher self, we have a spirit team, we have all of that, just like there's 7 billion people on this planet, and they appear to be separate from us, but they're not. So yes, there is that spirit world of your spirit guide, your spirit team, your higher self, your angels, all of that exists, but that does not take away from it's all one. It's still
I think a lot of people would like to understand that intellectually. And a great philosopher has said that it is true that the intellect cannot answer all things, but spirituality can never go against reason. It needs to be logical and intelligent in a way that, you know, it can, the truth is the truth. It depends on the perspective you're looking at it.
Exactly.
However, you know, it can never be illogical. It can never be unreasonable. And so I'm a proponent of that idea that we do attempt to try to make sense of and try to understand how the idea of the soul and the idea of an afterlife and spirit guides, how can that coexist with the notion of quantum physics? Can these ideas, even intellectually, can they coexist? And in my finding, they do.
Yes.
Because even on this earth, though scientifically everything is one, and you and I don't really perceive that oneness really.
Exactly.
Because of our conditioning, right? So the idea
actually, it's not just because of, it is because of conditioning, that's one thing. But the other thing is scientific, everything I believe in is backed in science. Science has proven long ago how limited the human body is, how limited our sight is, how limited our hearing is.
Absolutely.
It's extremely limited. And with scientific equipment, it can detect far more than our physical body. So I always say, if a person says, I only believe in what I can see with my physical eyes, then you're negating 99.99999% of what is actually surrounding you. And this is science. This is science.
Let's make a distinction between science and logic and reason, okay? These are two different things. When I talk science, I don't mean just the empirical evidence. I mean logic and reason. And I think that it's not a vain attempt to try to see how far reason can take us to understand the reality of that, what beyond whatever we can see and feel. Mm-hmm. And the problem that we have is that we try to judge everything with our limited sensory idea. And whatever we can see, we say, well, that doesn't exist. Well, that's not really intelligent to me. I mean, whatever is, even whatever science declares to be able to see is not necessarily the proof that that is so. Because 100 years ago, you could never say that, well, one day we're going to walk on the moon. They would have laughed at you.
Right, or fly.
Yeah. 300 years ago, they said the Earth was flat. And so, you know, just
and there's still people saying that today, which is funny, but it's all good.
It is.
It's all about perspective, yes.
Well, the thing is, science always is still limited to the degree of perception. But what is important, I feel, is to try to reason and use our intelligence to try to see whether we can still make sense of the idea of reincarnation, the idea of life between life, and the idea of quantum physics. Like, can all of these ideas coexist if we would reason deeply enough and if we be acquainted with bigger ideas that in our culture are not yet so much known? Whereas, as you so rightly said in the beginning, there has been, for eons, there have been cultures that have understood the oneness of all things. And the Vedas and in Tibetan Buddhism and in so many other cultures, people have been aware of the oneness of things. And if you read the Upanishads, the ancient scriptures of the Vedas, thousands of years ago, they have already talked about the oneness of all things. But the beauty that we have today is that we do have quantum physics, and that we have so many great scientific discoveries. And what I always try to do is try to make people understand that the idea of a soul and the idea of an afterlife does not have to contradict logical and scientific thinking, because we just haven't thought about it properly. And the way I look at it is that when this scientist told me at that time during my session, when he said, well, I didn't like Michael Newton, I said, well, maybe you haven't really understood exactly what it is he tried to do and how these ideas can all exist, your idea and his idea.
Yes.
He said, well, how? Help me understand. I said, well, I asked him a simple question. I said, when you die, what dies? He said, well, my body dies. I said, do you believe that your spirit survives? He said, yes. I said, well, there is already one mistake in your thinking. is that if you think just your soul survives, then according to your thinking of oneness, that soul after death would just merge into the oneness. There wouldn't be any idea of past lives or life between lives or reincarnation possible, because all that exists is your soul that is like a drop in the ocean, and it would merge into oneness. And said, so, but you said that you believe in the idea of reincarnation. He said, yes, I do. That makes sense to me. I said, okay. So we have to make a small adjustment. And the adjustment is that when you die, it's not just your body that dies. What happens is around your soul, it's not just the soul that survives. It is also all the conditioning that you have experienced, what we call a subtle body or an astral body. Yes. That is what is wrapped around the soul. And it is not the soul that that survives just by itself. It is also all the impressions of all the lives you have lived and all the memories and all the conditioning that survives with you. And yes. So just as on Earth, you perceive reality because of the conditioning you have experienced, your parents, your environment, your body. In the same way, in the afterlife, you still carry the sheath with you. And that's why you will see, even in the afterlife, you will see diversity.
Mm-hmm.
You will yes. see spirits. You will see yes. worlds. Because yes. you're looking through that sheath.
Yes.
The goal is to have that sheath become completely translucent. That because of reincarnation, that sheath gets so cleaned up, basically, gets so unwound, it gets so translucent that even while you're alive, you could start perceiving oneness. Because there have been accounts of so many saints that have, while they were living, felt oneness with everybody. And all of us too, there are moments that we do feel that when we're full of love. And the reason why we cannot see it now is because of all this conditioning around us in our minds, all these impressions, they are kind of like a sheath around us that separates us. All the notions of sex, of race, of culture, of the collective subconscious, all of these ideas, they kind of wrapped around our soul and kind of form a barricade. The more I think myself as a Dutchman, the less I will feel oneness with you as an American. The more I feel myself straight, the more difficult I will have the acceptance of gay. So the more I get rid of all these ideas, the more clear my conditioning becomes, the more translucent it's become, the more I feel you and I, we are one.
Yes.
And so that state of purity is to be attained. And the same thing is true in the afterlife. So when we ascend into that afterlife, the sheath, of course, the body is not there, which is a big advantage, but all the memories of the past is still there. And it will determine what we perceive in the afterlife. And mm-hmm. But it is possible to come to a state where all of this is just going away. And then we will perceive that I am a drop of the ocean. Then my soul is part of the infinite reality. And that is the idea of nirvana, the idea of samadhi, the idea of the oneness of all existence. And you don't have to die for that. We can experience that here and now, and that is the goal.
Yes.
And so what Michael Newton said and discovered in that work is absolutely real from the perspective of the beholder.
Yes.
But there is way more. There is way higher states of liberation and spiritual awakening. And what I'm trying to share in my book is that why wait till you're dead?
Exactly.
Why not come to that awakening here and now and feel the love and the oneness with every being, with every plant, with every tree, and the reward is the joy that you're going to feel in your heart, the yes. love that you're going to feel in your heart for everybody.
Yes, well, that exactly is the goal of this show. Yes. Is exactly the goal. You don't have to wait to. Now, I have had many guests that have had near-death experiences, and in their near-death experiences, they experience that oneness. And there are people that experience that oneness that are deep meditators that have meditated for years, and they experience that connection to all that is, that oneness yeah. that we are. But exactly like you said, you don't have to die to get there. And I feel that's exactly why I launched this show, is to inspire. It's not, I say I'm not a preacher, I'm not a teacher, I'm not a guru. I try to inspire people to go within, because that oneness is within each of us. And I love you use the drop of the ocean, because my favorite quote is Rumi, you're not just a drop in the ocean, you're the entire ocean.
Yeah,
that's in the drop.
That's the goal.
You're the entire ocean in the drop. It's holographic, meaning we are, each of us are all of God in a drop. All of, and my term for God is all that is. It's this table, it's the computer, it's the trees, it's the plants, it's the animals, it's everything is God.
Well, yeah, and the great philosopher Vivekananda said, that drop is center everywhere, circumference nowhere.
Yes.
So when you are in that state, on the threshold of oneness, where you still have a sense of I am, but before you merge in the ocean, at that highest level of individuality that is still cosmic, then you are like a drop in the ocean. Every drop is the center, because every drop is the ocean, and its circumference is infinite in all directions. So
exactly.
At that point, we become one. And that, to me, also is, on my personal level, that is my goal to be permanently attached to that awareness.
Exactly, exactly. And for me, it's a moment to moment. In each now moment, I remind myself of that truth, that there is no one separate from me, that we're all one. And it's just each person has a different perspective and they're living their life by their perspective. But I know the truth of oneness lies within each of us. And when we tap into that, and usually we have to put our mind out of the way and just focus on, for me, it's focusing on my breath, going within and listening to more so my higher self, my soul, is what connects me to that oneness, all that is. But very, very true. And there's so many different ways to, I say there's 7 billion people on the planet, so there's 7 billion different ways to connect and tap into that oneness and understand that it's, everything is just a different perspective. And yes, we take all of our experience, because that's what God, as all that is, wants to experience everything. And so the experience in each lifetime, yes, we take with us. That doesn't go, the body actually comes from the ground and it goes back to the ground. But your soul, the infinite soul, takes the experience with each of us. And also, The Power of Now is one of my great favorite books, because I do believe time is only, and Einstein said this, time is merely an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. If time is something we as humans use, but in the spirit realm, there is no time. We are, for me, I don't even say reincarnation anymore. I say simultaneous lives. We are living all of our lives in the eternal moment of now. So it's all happening right here and now.
Yeah, that is the experience of the higher cosmic consciousness. And I get to see a lot of people during these sessions to
yes.
experience that. And, the issue, though, is that, we may understand it intellectually and scientifically and inferentially, but to come to that, realization is two different things, right? So one thing that I learned when I used to live with many of these great saints when I was in India and so many of these places is that what differentiates one from another is the level of experience. So, we can have that notion, but then we have to make it a living and breathing reality. And that's where the truth of the difficulty comes in. And so I'm always a fan of people trying to have that experience for themselves. And that's one of the things that I love about the work that I do, is that they get to experience some of this for themselves, that yes. they go back to first the past life, and that itself has huge psychological implications. You don't even, first we go back to a past life, and then we go back to a life between life. But let's say you do only a past life regression, that itself has huge implications for the psychology of somebody, because what happens is if you have a real strong and vivid past life experience or a memory, it immediately starts to change the way you experience the here and now, because you realize, oh my God, this is just a temporary, you know, play in a matrix. This is just one training program that I'm running. And I've so identified myself with it. I have difficulty distancing myself from it. I've bought into my own conditioning, my own, you know, sexuality, my own race, my own cultural conditioning, all of these things that I have so attached myself to so strongly, whereas I am an eternal being and I've lived in other lives and other bodies and other races and other, you know, in other climes. And so that itself opens somebody up to such a different way of thinking that immediately is a step towards love, because
yes,
you realize I have been Ahmed in living in Abu Dhabi in my past life. Immediately you become very much loving and open to the notion that, hey, you know, I was that same race.
Yes.
Now it's so different from me.
Yes. You know? Yes, exactly. So, I identify what you're saying totally. I personally, I don't identify where the location, I don't identify with being a United States citizen, an American. I don't identify with being a woman. I don't identify with being of color. I don't identify with any of these things. And I say I don't identify with any one religion. I don't identify with any of it, because I know I've been it all. I know I've been male and female. I know I've been gay and straight. I know I've been of every color. I know I've experienced it all. So now that I'm awakened to who I truly am, I don't identify with any of it.
That is so beautiful, and it's such an important lesson. And if anything, that is the first fundamental, you know, step towards realizing that we're all one. Of course, you know, the problem is that not everybody is willing or able or, you know, to accept the notion that we have lived before. And so that's where quantum physics comes in. You know, you don't have to believe in past lives to embrace this idea, because at the end of the day, scientifically, what we're seeing is totally inaccurate. I mean, our senses are so extremely limited.
Yes.
To say that what I'm seeing is reality is the biggest fault to begin with. And so at the end of the day, only oneness does exist, scientifically so accurate. I mean, put your hand under a powerful microscope and you realize there's no hand to be seen. I mean,
exactly. I'll never forget, one of my awakening moments happened to me in seventh grade when we were studying atoms and molecules, and my science teacher clearly said nothing is truly solid. So, right. And I was like, what? You know, but that was an awakening, because what he was saying was speaking to my soul.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't an intellectual moment. It was a soul moment. And my soul's like, yeah, this is true. Nothing is true. We separate the physical from the spiritual, but it's not. There is no separation. What we call physical is just very dense. Mm. It's much denser, and it's at a lower vibration. Everything is energy vibrating at a certain frequency. And what we are calling the physical realm, the physical reality, is just extremely, it's so dense, it appears to be solid to our limited senses. But it's still spirit. It's still a part of spirit.
Well, you know, the definition of yoga is yoga citta vritti nirodha, the cessation of the waves of the mind. So when it is possible to start to actually experience, not in some intellectual, conceptual, or even a belief sense, but in an actual sense of perception, that it's possible to start to actually perceive that. And so when you read the definition of yoga, yoga citta vritti nirodha, it means yoga is a cessation of the waves of the mind. So when the waves of the mind, all these waves that are produced by karma, by perpetual motion, by conditioning, that sits in our subconscious mind, that is both the collective of our past as well as what we get at in this life, and it's continuously in motion. And this motion is like a big, dense screen that prevents the soul from truly manifesting. And so the Eastern philosophy says this beautifully. It's not so much, you know, that the soul needs to evolve, because the soul already is perfect. It's already the drop of the ocean. But what it needs to do is needs to manifest. And so how does it manifest? It is by clearing out all these waves that are perpetually in motion in our subconscious being. And so when we learn through yoga, through pranayama, through breath work, we can address those waves, and we can kind of, you know, when you, Yogananda used to say, you know, pranayama is samadhi. Yes. This breath work can lead to the notion of oneness. When the mind waves flatline, then that soul can manifest freely. And so we are able to, at that moment, to experience actually, perceptually, experientially, we can start to experience oneness. We can actually feel and see and sense that everything is one and connected. And so it's not at that point anymore an intellectual experience. At that moment, it becomes a living and breathing reality. And so what a lot of people don't understand is that this is something we can practice, that we can do techniques for, that there is many spiritual practices and breathing and yoga practices and Buddhist practices and all kinds of practices, prayer, whatever tradition you come from.
Yes.
If we learn to quiet the mind, the stillness in our minds, whatever religion you have, wherever you come from, whether you know the word yoga or not is not really important. But the secret is to quiet the waves in the mind. And because that's the sheath that holds all the conditioning. And once these waves in the mind flatline, they become really quiet, that moment the mind becomes, it's like fog on a mirror.
Yes.
You can't see yourself because the fog is all the memories of your past and all the workings of your conditioning. And once that fog evaporates, yes, when all the density is gone, I can see myself, yes, in the mirror. I can see my own soul manifesting. And there is not only a tremendous inner joy, but there's knowledge, there is light, and there is love at that moment.
Very true, very true. It was a science documentary I was watching that I had that awakening to oneness. And it wasn't from an intellectual level, it was from a heartfelt level. And it was one particular statement that was made from a person who's not a scientist. Her name was Lynn McTaggart. She made this statement. She said, "The biggest problem in the world today is the illusion of separateness." And when she said that, something woke up inside of me, just like when my science teacher said, "Nothing is truly solid," something woke up inside of me. That was my soul. It wasn't an intellectual knowing, it was a soul knowing that, right, yes, the biggest problem is that we think we're separate when we're all one. And when man, and I see, and I believe the day will come when mankind as a collective consciousness will wake up to the truth of oneness. And when we understand that we are all one, that would not only put it into war, it'll put it into poverty, it'll put it into all illness, it'll put it into all of the problems that we have on this planet.
I agree. And it starts with every individual first taking responsibility for their own idea of being separate. And we have to start small by first learning to accept everybody around us and to just think a little bit deeper to understand that wherever I feel uncomfortable with somebody is because I want to hold on to my old notions and I'm afraid to let go of these old notions, and I should not be afraid. I should embrace everybody. I should embrace all cultures. I should embrace all the diversity and don't feel that they're going to take anything away from me. Because in reality, they're going to, as you say beautifully, they're going to contribute to sharing of wealth. They're going to contribute to sharing of knowledge. They're going to contribute to sharing of safety. Because oneness is actually what brings peace.
Yes.
And so people are so afraid, and that's why they're becoming racist. That's why they're becoming fundamentalists. That's why they're becoming idiots, because they want to hold on because they're afraid of others, that it's going to take something away from them. But in reality, it's the exact opposite.
Exactly.
Because oneness leads to all the good things.
Yes.
And so
yes,
this should be taught. This should be taught in schools. This should be taught in churches, in But yes. They see the opposite.
Yes, it's very true. I do believe this should be taught in everywhere. That's why I think, and it should, I love that it's really, if we think of it from the very simplistic truth of oneness, where everything is telling us that we're one. Science, ancient wisdom, ancient religions, I mean, everything is telling us that we are all one. And when you know it in your heart, it brings about unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness. You know that that other is a part of you, so you can forgive that other. And it also brings about unity within diversity, meaning another person can believe something totally different. And I have friends like this. I have friends that are fundamentalists, but I love them and they love me. So, and we don't have to believe the exact. I can have love and respect for someone that has a total opposite belief than me. I can feel, because that's their perspective. And I know that in their core, they are a divine being. And so they have a different perspective than me. I can still love them and appreciate them. You don't have to agree to love and respect another person.
And to also understand that duality is the reality of the material world.
Yes.
I mean, there will always be duality, as there will be opposites, hot and cold, warm and not warm, and there will be ugly and not ugly, and there will be light and darkness, and these pairs of opposite are on a material level realities, and that's okay.
Yes, it is.
You know, and that, you know, you are more than a material being, and so that the idea is to understand that, you know, diversity is totally okay on a material level, but that you are a mental spiritual being. Mm-hmm. That does not have to identify with the material and not be sucked down to the material level.
Yes. And
so that we both have the intelligence to understand that there will always be diversity.
Yes.
There will always be gay, straight, and in between. There will always be all the colors of the rainbow. There will always be all the countries in the world. There will always be different languages.
Yes.
And that is the beautiful tapestry of this material world.
Yes.
And that this diversity is not a scary thing, but that mental, on a mental spiritual level, is where we need to have conceptually and spiritually, that's where we need to find the oneness in education and understanding and spiritual understanding. Yes. And so not to seek, what people do is they try to seek oneness on a material level, which is basically creating a theosophy, you know, trying to establish one religion or trying to establish one thought, but it can never be.
Exactly.
In the material world, you can never have oneness.
Yes.
So once we understand that there's different levels and we become less fanatic on a material level and trying to change things to suit our, you know, affinities, our physical and cultural affinities.
Yes.
Because they're, you know, just accept the fact that in France they speak French.
Yes. yes.
Don't try to make it one there, because it's never going to be one at that level. It's going to be one in an idea that, you know, I may live in France or in Holland or in the United States or in India, but my being is not attached to any of it.
Like
beautifully, I don't identify with man or woman. I don't identify with race. I don't identify with religion. I don't identify. So,
yes,
you know, there's these different tiers that we need to properly understand.
Yes. You know? And from the material dualistic point of view, the symbol, the yin yang symbol, which is equally dark and black and white. It's equal. Yeah. I love that, because to me, that is the symbol of oneness. You know, if you understand that what people call good and evil is all a part of the oneness.
It's very important to me.
It's not separate. Yes.
Oh, there's this beautiful Indian deity, Kali, you know, and she's a goddess that has like several arms and holds a skull in one hand and a sword and then a blessing in the other, and stands on the chest of another deity, Shiva. And so this symbology, what it really represents is that you know, in the material world, you know, I am all of this.
Yes. Like
he says, I am the creation means I am good and evil. So you hear sometimes in church being said, oh, God is good. But it's a very limited idea of thinking about reality, because in reality, the goddess, she is good and evil. She is the manifestation of this universal world. And in this duality,
yes,
duality as a whole, as you said, the yin and the yang, it's one.
Yes.
But that includes the darkness and the light. And so liberation can never be found in the yin and the yang. It can only be found in transcending
yes.
duality.
Duality,
so that's
right.
What I was trying to say earlier is that right. on the material plane, it will always be yin and yang, and it will always be diversity. And liberation is not to be found in being only good.
Right.
Liberation is understood that the duality of all things, that is the oneness. And I can only find liberation in accepting oneness from that much higher perspective.
Yes, very true. Very true. Yes, yeah. You're absolutely right. And I'd like for you to share, do you have some some of your patients' journeys that you can share with us when you've taken them in hypnosis? Some amazing accounts of their therapy, of their trend, of their, what am I, regression. Sure. That's the word I'm
looking for. Yeah, I mean, yes. I do this all the time. And so I've gone through hundreds and hundreds of these cases.
Yes.
Of all different kinds. One that just comes to mind is, it's in one of my chapters of my book, is I had this interesting guy come in. He was a publisher in San Diego, in Las Vegas.
Okay.
One of my stops is Las Vegas. And he was a very tall gentleman that came in, and he was very indrawn. So when he first walked in, he was kind of indrawn. It was almost like he was stoned.
Okay.
But he was very indrawn and very quiet, but very big personality. And so I thought, oh, that's going to be interesting. So we started going back first in the past life. And it turns out that, you know, we were going back to him first being a peasant somewhere in France or Belgium somewhere.
Okay.
He was a simple peasant, but he felt within himself that he had much more potential. And so he, at that time, you know, Europe was governed by the Catholic Church mostly.
Yes.
And so he went from the village. He had this ambition to do something more with his life. And so he was seeking employment. He wanted to join the church.
Okay.
He said, I want to join something bigger than I feel I experience right now as a peasant. And so he had that internal feeling like, you know, I'm something bigger. I want to belong to something. And he kept repeating like, you know, I want to have purpose. And so
yes.
In medieval Europe, what is there other than the church that is a powerful organism? And so
right.
He wanted to join wanted to become a monk. And so he approached the offices of the bishop. And one of the attendants of the bishop says, well, you know, you don't have to join the church as a monk. Well, why don't you take employment with me and you become an attendant of the bishop? Would you like to do that?
Okay.
He says, sure, I'll do that. And so he became an attendant of the bishop. And through over the years, he became more and more close with the church. And finally, as I progressed him forward, he had joined the Crusades as a soldier of the church, because there was they had these papal armies, you know, the Pope's armies.
Okay.
And he had the bishop had sent him to join one of the fights that the church was experiencing against invaders or against other countries or territorial wars and whatnot. And so,
right.
From the bishop's employment, he temporarily joined one of those papal armies. How
okay.
are you? Papal. I don't know how you pronounce it. So either way.
I get you.
And then the scene went forward, and suddenly he found his, and he was walking after one of those battles. He was walking with his army towards Rome.
Okay.
And so I asked him, why are you going to Rome? He said, well, you know, we are being commended by the Pope for our you know, for our sacrifices and for fighting for the, and he was very emotional. He felt so happy that he's belonging to something bigger.
Right.
And finally, you know, we regressed him forward, and he actually was in front of the Pope, and he wept profoundly, and the Pope, gave him a command of a big army, because he had very heroic, and he had defeated so many people, and he finally became a big commander.
Right.
In a church controlled army.
Okay.
And then we progressed him further, and it ended up at the end of the story, he became a king.
Oh.
He was a king, and all my years, I've only seen two kings. It's not very common that everybody's a king.
Okay.
He ended up being a king of some kingdom in Prussia somewhere.
Okay.
In Hungary, Austria, in that area.
Okay.
King of a country, and he described that experience, what it was like to be a king.
Wow.
And it was beautiful. It was just an amazing experience how this peasant ended up becoming a king.
That's amazing. Yeah, that is really amazing.
And what happened then, we went further, because we do after the past life, we do the life between life. And so
right.
You always wonder what happens to these souls after they were kings, right? So
right.
He ended up going up higher, and there he met a guide, and the guide took him, I think, to some other council or whatever, and there.
Mm-hmm.
And started having an overview of this life as a king.
Right.
So, you know, we asked some questions at that point, like, you know, how was this life? And he said it was a very good life, because I had a lot of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And a very noble king. And then the question that we ask is, well, what could you have done differently? And so he was asking the guides and the council, the great beings,
mm-hmm.
what could you have done differently? And he says, well, I could have, you know, be more attached to the idea of love.
Mm.
I was attached to the idea of nobility. I was attached to the idea of power. I was attached to the idea of being good for everybody. But I wasn't really aware of the notion of love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That we're all one, and that, you know,
yes,
ambition is all right, and you may be a king, but you never considered the fact that, you know, we are at the end of the day all one people. And so then we went to the idea of his soul in this life.
Okay.
And so, because we want to take that learning to this life, and then we asked him, like, well, how are you trying to bring this learning from your past life into this life? And he says, well, in this life, I'm really trying to be much more aware of the idea that I shouldn't be striving for power, but I should be striving for kindness. I should be striving for love. I should be striving for oneness. And he was, as a publisher, he was trying to do that work by spreading ideas and knowledge to all the people, and using his intelligence and using his experience for good, and not for his own conquest, not for his own power, not for his own rising.
Yes.
And so he had these noble qualities. He had these qualities of leadership that he had acquired in past lives. And in this life, he was learning to use it to elevate consciousness.
Mm,
so it was this really beautiful. It is, and he had a big impact as a publisher. And so the thing
awesome.
Is, you see that king quality, you see it, like, you're being a presenter. That's a big platform. So who knows what your past life has been, you know? So the idea is to, the queen is working out ideas to spread knowledge over a much bigger audience and in a much higher level. It's not about conquest. It's not about power. It's about spreading ideas of love and then using your capabilities, your platform.
Yes.
And it was the message that was very much given there is that don't be stagnant. You mm-hmm. must contribute.
Right.
To the idea of oneness. Everybody has a responsibility. Yes, we are one, but we have to work at it together.
Yes, exactly. We all, what I say all the time, we're all unique aspects of God. And it's like, if you think of a big, gigantic puzzle, each piece is shaped a little differently. Each piece is unique. So we each have to do our part and bring our part to the whole. Because if we don't, no one else can fill what we're here to do. We all have a divine purpose. We're all here. We chose our divine purpose in the in-between lives. And we come back for a unique purpose, and nobody else could fulfill our purpose. So if we don't fulfill our purpose, it won't get done. That yeah. piece will be missing from
That's
the whole.
Beautifully yeah. said. That's so well said. That's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. No. And it doesn't matter what the range of our impact is. You know.
Yes.
I when I was younger, I always used to think like, you know, it would be nice to have my own spiritual center and give yes. big talks. And I used to do that to some extent in giving talks and, you know, in a monastery and this and that. And so,
right.
But then later on, I realized now I'm just working with individuals doing yes. this work. It's not about being on a big platform per se. Whatever work you do, whether you work somewhere at a bakery and you Right. you share love with every client that you meet, it's not about doing big things per se, but it's about sharing that frequency with others. That is more powerful than anything you could ever imagine. So
that is so true.
Each in our own way, we when we create that frequency of love and oneness and acceptance, we are much more powerful than we could possibly radiate, than we could realize.
Yes, that's so true. Like you could be passing someone in the grocery mart, in the grocery store, and they might be just having a really bad day, and you just smile. You can just smile and say, you know, wish them a good day. And that may just lift their spirit. It's the little things. It's the little act of kindness. Every single little act of kindness that you share with the world, it's rippling. That's a ripple effect throughout the whole universe. Not just the world, when yeah. a simple act of kindness, just a smile, just a, I wish you a good day, just those simple acts of kindness, they have great effects for the entire universe. That's yeah, how absolutely. Powerful we are.
It is. And I always used to remember a prayer that we used to have in before we had a meal that was, if you want peace of mind, do not look at the mistakes of others, because they're all part of you. And I catch myself that I'm, the other day I was grocery shopping and somebody was in front of me and it looked a little odd. And I, in my mind, I was like, oh my God, you know, and then I realized, you know what, man, don't do that, because, you know, you don't know the story of that person. You don't know how many lives they have lived. And I want to see the soul of that person in front of me behind all these strange clothing, behind that shabbiness. I want to see the eternal reality of that person. And immediately I felt something within myself, like you can feed yourself a little current of negativity into your heart every time you see difference. But in reality, by practicing such a simple thing, like, you know, if I just, every person that I see, and I make an attempt to internally, I don't have to do anything, internally, I can just give everybody the advantage of the doubt and give everybody the idea like, wow, you are an eternal being. And at that moment, I send a little current of love into my heart. And that way, instead of seeing diversity, I slowly start to strengthen within myself the idea of kindness, love, and acceptance. And then my heart becomes that place where every single person is not judged, but in my heart accepted as part of this oneness of reality. And so what is the net result? That I'm at peace.
Yes.
And then what is the net result of me being at peace? You know, unbeknownst, I send out light and positivity into this world. And so, but it starts with me practicing that. At every given moment with every person that I see, and not see difference, but see the oneness behind each being. And that is it. And you know, when I just start to practice that, there is this subtle shift in my heart that feels, you know, I feel that little joy current coming.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. That is so true. I live in the mountains in the Poconos, not far from New York City. And I just happened to have a meeting in New York this past Sunday, 2 days ago. And there was, as I was waiting for, I take a shuttle from New York to back to the Poconos. So I'm waiting for my shuttle. I noticed there was a homeless man who was going through the trash. And if I had, I'm bad. I never carry cash. I have no cash on me. I just have my my credit card. And if I had cash, I would give him a few, a few dollars, but I didn't have cash. But I did just, I said a little prayer and I said namaste, because I know that within namaste, meaning the divine soul within you, I am bowing down to. Because even though right now your physical appearance is homeless and you're going looking through trash for food, and I know that you are a divine being. I know you are a divine soul. And I say silently, I didn't say it aloud, but silently I say namaste to him. And like I said, if I had a few dollars, I just was like, I was going home from the meeting and I had nothing but my credit card. And so, but
yeah, that's beautiful. That's the practice that we all have a choice at any given moment to inclusion or to exclusion, you know? And so that choice is the power that we have as a being that is aware.
Yes.
And so, and every day, at any moment, we make that choice to either go towards oneness or to separateness.
Yes.
So the more we strengthen the awareness that I have a choice, the more aware I'll become. Because the awareness, what it to me really means, is aware of the fact that you have a choice to see oneness within yourself and in the universe, or you are not aware and you just live as an automated habit machine that is not participating in creating anything positive.
Yes.
Right. And so,
yes.
No, that to me is what awareness is. And we have to practice that and cultivate that. And it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult for me and it's difficult for everybody, but you know, we just keep plugging away at it every day, trying to be a little bit better and a little bit
more
kind.
And the thing I always say too is everybody, see, when you look from the spiritual eyes, with spiritual eyes, you know that everybody is exactly where they're supposed to be. So everybody is awake or asleep to the level they're supposed to be. Eventually, we will all be awake, you know. But in this illusion of time, it seems like in truth, we're all still in spirit. It's just a small portion of us that come in incarnate, because our entire soul can't really fit into this body. You know, it's just a tiny piece of us that is here. The larger part of us, our higher self, still is in the spiritual realm. And it's this small piece of us that forget. We come here to play in this game, this matrix, this dream. I say this dream of our own creation, because God wants to experience it all. So he's experiencing life as Peter. He's experiencing life as Caroline. And what he takes from this life is all of those experiences.
Beautiful.
You know, he sheds the body, but he takes the experiences.
Couldn't be said more poetically and beautifully. That's, you know, if you read some of the Eastern scriptures, the Upanishads and the Vedas, they describe reality to be the way you do it, the way you said it. It's really very beautiful and kind of really the only way to really make sense of it all, you know?
And honestly, that makes sense, because I was sent to Catholic school as a young child, and what I was being taught in Catholic school never resonated with me. It didn't make sense.
No.
But this one, it was oneness. Like I said, I think it was around 2007. That I was watching What the Bleep, which is a film on quantum physics, and it was an awakening. It truly was. It was like, I get it. And once I understood oneness, everything else made sense.
Yeah.
You know, everything. It just made everything make sense to me, and it made sense to me on a layman elementary level, not a big quantum science. I'm not a scientist, so I can't go around explaining science from a scientific perspective, but I can explain it from a layman's perspective, that everything is energy and that energy is interconnected and interdependent. Very simple explanation of what it is. And yes, and I do believe one by one, we are awakening as a collective humanity. And I do believe we're heading in the right direction.
I believe that too. And I think there's much more positivity going on than we realize.
Yes.
Not to be deluded by the news, but there are so many millions and billions of people here all feeling like we do, and think there's a lot of longing out there for that new world. And I'm also convinced that it will take place, that it will happen eventually.
Yes, yes, yes. And I smile anytime people say the word news, because it was just, I was told within, after 9/11, there was nothing on but news. So I had the TV on in the background and the news was on. I was cleaning up my room and something within me said, turn off that news and never turn it back on again. Now this wasn't audible. It was a feeling from within.
Yeah.
And it said, turn off the news and never turn it back on. Now this is before I was awakened to the universal truth of oneness. So I didn't know why. And I even said, why? But I was obedient. I walked over to the television, turned it off. I have never watched news since. Now, people will say, oh, you don't know what's going on. I know everything that's going on. First of all, I'm on the internet. And headlines, when you go into your email, headlines pop up and blah, blah, blah. If I see something interesting, I might click and read about it. But normally, I'm like, no. I don't need that vibration. And then it was many years later, I learned the reason why my inner self, my higher self, said turn it off was because it was that the vibration was a low vibration, keeping us in a state of fear. That's what the news does. And so once I learned, okay, I was very happy I made that decision.
It is. And that's again that idea that we have a choice.
Yes.
And we have a choice to see that awareness, and we have a choice to be aware and to vote for oneness versus living in fear, and which creates separateness. And so, you know, you can say, oh, it's such a negative world, but it's not. It's one of your own making. I mean, the moment you make a choice to turn off the news and you make a choice to be positive and irrespective of whoever's around you, you know, we will be the recipient of the choice that we make. I mean, if I make a choice towards diversity and say, oh, you're so different, what happens to me? I get a little negative shock into my being. That negative energy is like polluting me. Whereas if I choose to say, hey, you know, you and I, we're one, at that very moment that love brings us together, and then we have suddenly more positive energy and more light. And who is the beneficiary of it? I am, because I feel good. I taste the results of my own positive choice, and I'll be happier. So
yes, yes.
It's something that is very practical.
Yes.
It's very, you know, rewarding.
Yes. Yes, yes. I think it's very practical. And I really think when people really look at it, it's undeniable. You know, I really do. I think when people truly look at it, they find it for themselves within, because that's where it's in within each of us.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I agree.
Thank you so much, Peter, for being my guest. Could you please share with our listeners where they can find you and where they can get a copy of your book?
Well, this is the book.
Yes.
It's called When Souls Awaken, Real Life Accounts. I have to read my own title. From Past Life and Luck Between Life Regressions. And you can get it on Amazon. That is the easiest way. If you have Prime, it's free shipping. You don't have Prime, you may as well get it from my website. If you want a signed copy, get it from my website.
Okay.
SoulsAwaken.com.
Okay.
So I would say just go to Amazon because it's the easiest. And if you want to contact me, you can go to WhenSoulsAwaken.com.
Okay.
Or Elsen is ELSEN hypnotherapy.com. And on my website, there are all kinds of ways to, you know, meet me and connect with me. And, you know, I travel a lot through different areas of the country. So.
Okay.
If anybody wants to do sessions in the East Coast or West Coast, I'll be on the West Coast every 2 months.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm always available.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, very good. Yes. I love your accent. I love European accents. They're just so much better than American accents. So much richer, I think. Yes. Well, thank you so much for being my guest. And I love what you're doing. I love that you're following your inspiration and healing the world by doing what you're supposed to be doing. And so that's what I try to do with this show. Encourage people, go within, tap into your truth and live your truth. Like you said, it's not always easy, but when you do it, you feel good. That's yes. The only thing, because feeling good is a sign from your soul that, yeah, you're doing what you came here to do. So, yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much. I love this. And hopefully, maybe, I travel a little bit. I wouldn't say a lot. I mean, since I've been doing the show, I've been traveling more. So I'm looking forward to traveling more in 2020. So maybe our paths will cross. Hopefully.
Yes, it's a small world, so we'll do it again.
It is. Very true. Well, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day,
you
and we'll be in touch very soon.
And thank you. Bye-bye.